Hey, everybody, time for another movie retrospective.
That's right, Candyman.
You know what I was thinking when I was thinking about doing this movie? Yeah. I said, if we say Candyman five times during the course of this review, does that mean he's going to appear behind us and gut us with his hook?
Yeah. I saw Candyman when it was new. I think we rented it on VHS when it came out. What year was this again?
92 it came out.
92.
Because I saw it in the theater.
So I must have been in the Army at the time.
Yeah.
92. I probably just rented it from, the rental place that we had. I remember liking it.
It's a great fucking movie. And yeah. I feel like it's one that kind of gets forgotten about a lot. Now, I'm going to say right here that, you know, I love horror from all eras. But I do feel like the early 90s were a little bit of a wasteland. There were some good ones in there, but I felt like after Scream came out, you know, after a lot of the horror movies in the 90s went in that kind of like ironic slasher sort of direction. And so it's, you know, so it's notable to me that Candyman, which came out in 1992, which on its surface kind of sounds like a slasher, but it's really not.
More like gothic horror.
It is. It is kind of like a gothic horror story. Yeah. It's for real, like, kind of like a precursor to, like, maybe Jordan Peele's movies, particularly Get Out.
It definitely has that 90s tone to it. It feels like a Neil Gaiman kind of story, 90s tone. And, you know, if you grew up in this era or you went through this era, you recognize it immediately.
Yeah.
It's good to revisit these old movies. It was enjoyable to watch. It is slow by today's standards, but gothic horror was like that. It does build up to a cool ending. It's very Dracula-like.
It is a bit in
the structure of the story, kinda. The character Candyman is kind of like a Dracula. He's a ghost version of a Dracula.
Well, in the sense too that he's clearly a villain and he's scary, but he's also kind of sympathetic because you get like some of his backstory and you can understand like why he's pissed off.
Yeah, and you know, and he's a flying pretty motherfucker, you know, who's kind of intimidating, like a Dracula.
Yeah,
he's like a Dracula. But what's good is that, you know, in terms of, you know, if you ever go back to see the old '70s version, Blackula. Which I love both those two movies. Actually, they're really good. They're much better than you think that they would be by the titles. You know, influenced Anne Rice. In this case, instead of copying Dracula and just making him a black vampire, this is a totally unique character. I like that part of this.
Yeah, this for
is,
real.
Candyman is his own thing.
That's the thing. It's like I really like, in general, like things that are based around urban legends, because I've always found that sort of thing very fascinating. So, I mean, the original story was by Clive Barker, and it was called The Forbidden. Now, this was also, you know, Clive Barker's obviously a Brit. Now, the writer and director of this, the guy who wrote the screenplay, Bernard Rose, was also British.
Yeah.
But he decided, in the original story by Clive Barker, which I read many years ago, it was actually set in kind of a slum in Liverpool. And the Candyman character, even there is an urban legend, there is that whole aspect to it, you know. But the Candyman character was actually a really pale white dude with like long blonde hair, and he had like a patchwork kind of outfit. And he would kind of appear. But they didn't have, I mean, obviously once the story was moved to the U.S., specifically Chicago.
Yeah, they adapted it.
And based around the notorious Cabrini Green, you know, kind of projects, which, you know, are still, I think they've been a bit gentrified now, but.
Yeah, they certainly look cool in the film. You can tell that everything's kind of like filmed on location.
Oh, it definitely was.
I mean, it has a feel. You know you're in a real place.
Yeah.
It's not artificially real busy. There's cars going around everywhere. It does have a really good realistic kind of tone in a way. But the colors are sometimes kind of comic booky colors. It's good. I like the execution.
And like you said, it's almost like in the way that this building is shot, I mean, people still live in it, but it's, you know, it's been taken over by gangs mostly. It's like there's graffiti everywhere. But the way it's shot is very gothic, like you said, like the angles of it, like just kind of the way it's shot looks a lot like that, almost like a cathedral sort of, which I think was kind of a cool aspect to the movie.
Yeah. It just has a cool, well-executed look and feel to the movie, and it's very much something of the 90s. But the good, better quality of the 90s, not cheap.
Like
90s.
I said, this is easily one of my favorite horror movies from the 90s. I mean, to be fair, not a lot not of competition quite, in that area,
not,
but...
It's not quite as pretty as Dead Ringers, but it's still, you know, still a cool flick.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But the thing about it, okay, so let's talk a little bit. I have to say, too, that it's like, this has a great fucking cast. Tony Todd, obviously, as Candyman, is fucking amazing.
Wait a minute, Dead what? Ringers. Was I thinking Flatliners or was I thinking of Dead Ringers?
I don't know.
Probably. The one that had the real all-star cast and they were dreaming.
That was Flatliners.
Flatliners, that's what
Dead
I meant.
Dead Ringers was the David Cronenberg
that's
movie
right,
about
right.
the
Got
twin
that
gynecologist with Jeremy Irons.
It kind of
reminds... But I still want to review one of these days because I love that movie.
It's kind of up there with Flatliners.
Yeah.
Not quite as pretty as Flatliners, but you can tell that they're from that same era.
Yeah.
You know, it just has a good tone. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know how it is. My fucking brain. But, yeah, it's a good flick. It was good to revisit it.
Yeah, but Netflix just added it, by the way, which is why we decided to do it, because I hadn't seen it in many years, and I was, like, really excited, and I was like, ooh, that's, like, a really good movie, and I feel like... Like I said, I feel like it's one that kind of gets forgotten about, even though it's super excellent, especially for that time period when there was, like, kind of a dearth of decent horror movies. And like I said, they got a great fucking cast with this. Tony Todd is incredible. He is, like, simultaneously intimidating and terrifying, but he's also... You also sympathize with him, and he's also seductive.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy.
And that fucking voice.
Got a voice,
man.
Right.
Oh, that
There's
voice.
There's only, like... two other voices that can compare to his voice, you know, and that's you know, James Earl Jones and Keith David. Keith David's got that same kind. Keith David could have done this role, I think, but...
Do you know who they wanted for this originally?
They originally
Eddie
wanted
Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
That would not have worked
it,
at all.
But I understand it, though. I understand it. I'm a big fan of Eddie Murphy's.
I am, too, but not in a movie like
and
this.
And I liked his vampire movie.
I did as well.
I'm a huge fan of the first two Beverly Hills Cop movies. I mean, I grew up with those.
I even like The Golden Child.
Yeah, Golden Child's great. I bought that the other day.
As weird and random as that movie is.
It's a good movie of its time. And that was that was when Murphy's career was still going strong, and they were just fun movies to watch. They weren't supposed to be, you know... They weren't supposed to be something that they weren't. They were just fun movies to watch, and they were well made. And Beverly Hills Cop, man, 1 and 2, I fucking loved them.
I know.
Yeah, well, like Axel Foley, a great character.
Well, like I said, I feel like, I mean, the fact that, you know, like I said, Eddie Murphy was the first choice. They couldn't afford him for this movie because this wasn't like a huge budgeted movie or anything like that. And I think that was for the good because... I love Eddie Murphy, I'm not saying that, but it's just like, I just don't think this role would have worked the same with Eddie Murphy.
He's not quite tall and scary
enough. That's what I mean. He's not intimidating enough. It's like you always have that idea that he's going to bust into a joke. Even in his vampire movies and stuff, he was kind of snarky and like...
You could tell that it was Eddie. But he did a good job. I'm just going to say...
Whereas in Candyman, I mean, Tony Todd, who I think was, if I'm remembering correctly, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, I think he was also in the 1990 remake of... Night of the Living Dead, which is actually pretty decent. If I remember, Tom Savini directed it, I think.
His last name is Todd? Tony Todd?
Yeah, Tony Todd.
Yeah. And, you know, this is really the only role I associate him with. He was in Night of the Living Dead, and what else?
I think he was in the Night of the Living Dead remake from 1990.
I think he was.
He's been in a bunch of other movies, too, and he was actually in the sequels to this, which we're not going to talk about because they're really not very good. But, you know what I mean? But fair play to him. This is kind of like his iconic role, obviously. He's been in a bunch of other stuff. But
could Eddie Murphy have pulled this off? Well, I'll tell you what. With Eddie Murphy billing on it, it would have gotten more at the box office. It probably would have.
I think that's what they were shooting for, but...
Yeah, would it have remained a classic, a cult classic? I don't think it would have.
No.
Although, what was the name of Eddie Murphy's vampire movie again?
Vampire in Brooklyn.
Vampire in Brooklyn. I got it on Blu-ray. I need to see it again.
Yeah,
I like it.
We watched it not too long ago. Yeah, I like that movie, too, like I said, it's, you know, it's just not...
It's not on the same
because
level.
Because this movie, this is a very serious movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is a film, right?
Yeah.
Even though, I think, and it's funny because I was watching this other guy's review of it. I can't remember what channel it was on, but he was like a younger guy, but he likes like a lot of older movies, but he had never got around to seeing this one because he thought it was just like a standard 90s slasher movie. And then he watched it and he was like, holy fuck, this is like a great fucking movie. He's like, not just a great horror movie, this is a great movie, period.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the writing is so good, the script is so good, the villain is so good, just the whole backstory of it is great.
The story, the way the story is kind of, way it kind of moves along and everything, it reminds, I'd put it on, what, I would put this on par with the first Hellraiser.
Yeah.
About like that.
And in some ways, like, because...
Which, that was good, because that was a great movie for its time also.
I mean, I love Clive Barker. Yeah. Film adaptations of his work tend to be very hit or miss. But Hellraiser and Candyman are easily the best, too. And honestly, some days I like Candyman better than Hellraiser. It just depends on what mood
that's right,
I'm in
that
day.
That's the same guy that wrote it, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, it is.
I always get Clive Barker and Neil Gaiman, they kind of merged together for some reason. I guess it was because they were in the same era, and I was watching them
around that same
era. Even though the tones of those...
Neil Gaiman is more fantasy-based.
But this one kind of had that kind of fantasy, dark fantasy tone to it. Watching it, I kept thinking of Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
But it did also feel like Clive Barker with that damn, you know... Hellraiser 1.
It
was kind of like a mixture of them both. For some reason, this had kind of a... Maybe it's because you said it kind of had that seductive level or feeling to it. It seemed a little fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, not quite as oppressive as the way Hellraiser was. Hellraiser was pretty fucking weird. Especially for the time.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of tame, Hellraisers, but, you know.
Well, I remember, like, the big deal when it came out. I remember reading Books of Blood when I was a kid and just being fucking blown away because I had never read anything like that ever.
Yeah.
Like, in any... And I'd read all kind of different horror, but that was the first time I'd ever read anything like that. But so, as I was saying a long time ago, the cast of this is, like, really, really good. Virginia Madsen is kind of the main character, and she is playing a... She's a graduate student named Helen Lyle. And she is writing her thesis, her and her friend Bernadette, who's played by Casey Lemons, who I've also, she was in Silence of the Lambs, too, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. But, so they're doing their thesis on urban legends. Now, they get really interested in, they're from Chicago, they're kind of from the right side of the tracks.
They're white people.
Yeah, they're, well, Casey Lemons isn't, one of them is, but they're like middle
well,
to
yeah,
upper
but
class,
I think
yeah.
the black girl's from the right side of the tracks.
That's what
too.
I mean, yeah. So there's that kind of thing going on. So they hear about this urban legend called Candyman that's been going around the residents of Cabrini Green, and he's like a mythical figure that is being attributed, you know, that like all these murders in this place are being attributed to him. Now, Helen Lyle, you know, being a college, you know, grad student and stuff like that, she is coming at it through the lens of, well, the people that live in this building, they live in these horrible conditions, their life isn't so great and stuff like that. So they are using this urban legend, this myth of this guy with a hook for a hand that comes through your mirror if you say his name five times. They're using that to deal with, like, the shitty conditions that they live in. So she's coming at it. She's a sympathetic character also, but she's coming at it from a little bit of, like, a privileged place where it's like, oh, you know, they're just...
They know what they're talking about.
They don't know, you know, they're just using it. It's not real and all this other kind of stuff. Now, the interesting thing, too, is that they juxtapose, and I'm not sure a lot of people catch this, but there is a scene in the where, you know, Helen Lyle lives with her creepy, philandering husband, who's played by Xander Berkeley, who's like a professor at the same college. And they live in this, on the other side of the tracks, like I said, in Chicago, like in the nice part of town. But she finds out that the building she lived in was built as a housing project. But then when her neighborhood started to gentrify, they fancied it up and made it look more like, you know, middle to upper class, because that's how she finds out that the bathroom mirrors, like, in between the apartments, like, pop out and there's no wall in between.
Yeah, she meant, you know, the apartments that are right up against each other that share common walls,
the medicine cabinets in the bathrooms.
If you pull one out, you'll see the back of another, so you can just push that out.
Yeah.
That's what, and evidently this is based on some real shit that happened.
Well, yeah, I was just going to mention that, because in the movie, She says they find out about this murder of a woman named Ruthie Jean that was killed in Cabrini Green by a man who busted in through her bathroom mirror. And they're attributing this to the Candyman. Now, this is absolutely based on a real case, Ruthie Mae McCoy. And she was 52 years old. And an intruder came in through her bathroom, like popped out the bathroom mirror and crawled just like in the fucking movie.
Came out through the mirror.
And shot her. Now, she actually called the cops, like, while he was coming through, and she said something like, he's coming in through the bathroom, or he's coming in through the cabinet, or something like that.
They didn't believe her.
They didn't believe her, or they didn't know what she was talking about. It's like, the cops actually came to her apartment, like, a while later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they're like, oh, it's the hood, who cares? So it's like, so they go there, and they knock on the door, she doesn't answer, so they leave.
Hmm.
And then later on, a neighbor hears gunshots and calls the cops again. And then finally, they wander their asses over there. And she even got found for 2 days.
Thought she was crazy.
Yeah.
Said a man was coming through the mirror.
Was coming through the mirror.
Yeah.
But he was.
He
busted out the fucking wall.
Imagine that. Maybe she actually thought he came through the mirror.
Well, maybe she did. I mean, if you didn't know.
Yeah,
she didn't. Like, I would probably have a fucking heart attack if I saw somebody. Because if I didn't know that the mirror popped out, because why would you?
Blow your fucking mind.
It would. Dude, that's what I mean. The mirror.
Maybe she actually believed it, yeah.
Right.
Fuck.
So the interesting thing about this is that as, Helen and her friend Bernadette, as they kind of start to interview, because obviously the people that live in Cabrini Green are very, like, you know, they don't want to talk to them at first, but finally she kind of gets this one woman to talk to, like, this one younger woman to talk to her, and, like, she gets this little boy named Jake to talk to her. And Jake tells her a story about Candyman killing a little boy in this, like, gross-ass bathroom that's, like, on the grounds and, like, cutting his penis off and leaving it in the toilet. And so Helen, being either really brave or incredibly stupid, like, goes into this bathroom to, like, check it out and take pictures. There's, like, shit, you know, stuff written on the walls and shit and all this other shit. It's like the disgusting Trainspotting bathroom. And so while she's in there, this guy comes in and says to her, "I hear you're looking for Candyman, bitch."
Yeah.
And he's got a hook for a hand, or like he's holding a hook in his hand.
Yeah.
And he knocks her ass out. So for a while, she thinks she's right. Because this gang member has taken on the mantle of Candyman in order to, like, instill fear in the people that, because he's like a drug dealer or something like that.
But of course, that ain't Candyman.
But of course, it's not. And so as the story progresses, because of course, like, very early in the story, like, Helen and Bernadette, like, go in the bathroom mirror and say his name 5 times because they don't think it's going to. Now, Bernadette chickens out, like, after the 4th time. And, like, Helen ends up saying it by herself. But nothing happens at first. So they think, oh, it's just all fun and games and everything like that. But then later on in the movie, and it takes about halfway through the movie, I think it's like at the 45 or 50 minute mark, and Helen is in, like, the fucking, parking garage or whatever, and she's the first glimpse of Candyman, you just see him standing way across the parking garage, and he has that fucking voice, and he's like, Helen.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so creepy.
Yeah.
Now, at some point earlier in the film, which I forgot to mention, this other professor, when he hears that Helen is studying the Candyman myth and is going to write her thesis on it, he mansplains to her because
he mansplained?
He did. Well, he totally does. Like, it's like a textbook example of mansplaining. But because she's been going and doing field research and stuff, he's like, oh, I already wrote a book about that a long time ago. Let me tell you all about it. You know what I mean? So they're all eating dinner and he tells the backstory of Candyman because Candyman used to be a real person. He was a live guy. And he was the son of a slave, and he actually kind of got prosperous by coming up with some kind of, like, I don't remember what it's like, some kind of innovation, like in making shoes or something like that. So he actually did pretty well for himself. He was also a painter, and so he kind of, like, moved around in high society, like painting, portraits of all the society ladies and stuff like that. Well, unfortunately for him, he falls in love with a white woman. And gets her white pregnant.
White woman's going to be the downfall of many a man, I'll tell you that.
I suppose so. Well, particularly in this case.
Okay.
So even though, you know, the hoity-toity hoi polloi or whatever
had previously been
all about it. Oh, he does beautiful paintings and let them paint all of their family members and stuff. once he falls in love with a white woman, she loved him back. It wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't anything like that. And got her pregnant. Everybody in the town decided they were going to lynch him in really one of the most horrible ways possible. One, they cut off his painting hand. I don't know if they stuck the hook in there or if he did that later. But then they smeared his whole entire body with honey, and he got stung to death by bees while everyone watched.
And this is supposed to be in Chicago?
Well, I'm not sure where that happened. Where that happened? Yeah, what I mean. It might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why there's like so much bee imagery and shit like that. And another thing, kids that have grown up with just CGI and shit like that, all the scenes in Candyman that you see with bees coming out of Tony Todd's mouth, bees all over Virginia Madsen's face, like coming out of his chest, those are all real bees.
Yeah, he put a big old wad of bees in his mouth.
And Virginia Madsen was allergic to bees. Yeah. Well, still is, probably. She was terrified.
I was sitting there watching it going, how the hell did they get that illusion to work?
It wasn't an illusion. Then, he really put bees in his mouth.
That's an illusion. I'm looking at it and I go, yeah, he does. He just has a big old wad of bees in his mouth.
That's how they used to do it back in the day. Yeah, that's hardcore.
You got to be careful and don't bite down on any of them.
Well, I heard, this is what I heard. I don't remember where I heard this from. I heard that Tony Todd said to the director or the producers or whatever, I want $1,000 for every time that I get stung.
Yeah.
So he got stung 23 times. So he got a $23,000 bonus for all the bees.
Back in those days, you could buy a car with that.
These were supposed to be like sort of more mellow bees, you know what I mean? Because bees they use in like
honey
movies.
Bees.
Yeah, they're supposed to like not stay. But obviously, if you're sticking the things in your mouth,
yeah, you're accidentally going to piss one of them off.
Then, of course, they're going to be like that. So, yeah, so there's this whole story about Candyman. And like I said, as it goes on, it seems like what Candyman does to Helen's character is since she's, I guess, the only one that can see him. So, like, he starts kind of framing her for various murders. Like, she ends up in the apartment of Anne Marie, the first woman that they talk to in Cabrini Green. Helen just wakes up in the apartment with, like, a fucking cleaver next to her hand. There's a decapitated dog.
Yeah.
Anne Marie is in there, like, screaming her head off. And her baby, Anthony, is missing. Yeah. So they presume that she is kidnapped. Her Candyman also murders her best friend Bernadette, and also Helen seems to black out and wakes up just in pools of blood and doesn't know what's going
on. It's a pretty cool scene,
and it's
it looked like a real dog's head sitting there.
It really did. It might have been. They might have got it from
the pound
or something. Because it really did look like a real dog's head, you guys. I mean, the thing about this movie is that a lot of it, you know, it plays out like kind of a supernatural drama. And at the point where Candyman starts, you know, framing her for crimes, it becomes almost kind of like, it's like super frustrating because you kind of know that she didn't do it, that Candyman is real. But then again, do you really? Maybe she is just crazy and maybe she did just kill all those people because that's how it looks to everyone else. And she gets put in a mental institution. No one believes her. You know, she says he's real and all this other kind of stuff.
I never looked at it that way, though. When
it could be interpreted that way.
You could interpret that way. But when I was a kid, I was just, oh, no, I saw him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So he must be real.
He had to be real, yeah.
Well, and I mean, and there's a scene, the one scene that a lot of people point to, it's like, oh, yeah, Candyman was real. Well, it's when she's in the office talking to the psychiatrist, and her hands are bound, like, to the chair arms.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, it wasn't me. It's like this urban legend. I know it sounds crazy, but it's like an urban legend. He came out of the mirror, and he kills people, and he's, like, making it look like I did it. She's like, I'll prove it to you. And she looks at a mirror in the psychiatrist's office and says his name 5 times. And for a second, nothing happens. And then Candyman comes up behind the psychiatrist and bam, that fucking hook comes right through his chest and like just fucking guts him. So, but the thing is, then after Candyman does that, then he cuts her restraints.
Yeah.
So it's possible she could have broken out on her own and done that. It's, I don't know, because like I said, you could interpret it that way, but it's much scarier to think that, like, an urban legend guy that, like, only you can see is, like, fucking people up and it looks like you did it. That's, like, terrifying to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, so obviously no one believes her, all this other kind of shit. Now, the cool thing that what I like about this movie is that it wasn't afraid to have a downer ending.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a bummer ending.
Yeah.
Now, it's not quite as much... it was a little bit different because I think the story, The Forbidden, I think actually the baby Anthony died at the end, which he doesn't in the movie.
I remember when I remember back in 92 when this movie, you know, maybe might have been 93, but I saw this movie when it was still fresh. I remember when we saw the ending at that time was kind of like the newish endings that you would get in these new movies. They were kind of subversive, like, like you said, it's kind of a downer ending.
Yeah.
It was a little bit unusual, but it did fit the times.
Yeah, and it fit the tone of the story. Right. I mean, what ends up happening is that Helen becomes part of the folklore that she was exploring.
Yeah.
Because the reason... Okay, there are two reasons that Candyman targeted her specifically. One, because she looked like the reincarnation of the woman that he had fallen in love with back in the 1800s. Two, because she had tried to demystify him.
Yeah.
By exploring the urban legend and saying that he wasn't real and and she helped get that drug dealer arrested, like near the beginning of the movie, that like was taking on Candyman's name and, you know, trying to scare people that way. So he saw it as her trying to demystify him.
Yeah.
And he seemed like he needed people to believe in him. Like a lot of the stuff that he said, like in voiceover, like throughout the movie, it kind of like, it was kind of a thing where you have to believe in me or I won't, or I can't exist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I feel like at the end of it, like she kind of becomes part of the folklore and she kind of becomes a Candyman sort of figure in her own right. Like one of the best scenes in the movie is like at her funeral and then like only a couple people are there because of like even her stupid husband and stuff who's been cheating on her the whole time. But with like some 18-year-old student or whatever.
Yeah.
But so there's only a couple people at the funeral because everyone thinks she's a crazy murderer. And then they just cut across to the cemetery and all the people from Cabrini Green are just coming in this big procession.
Yeah.
And they throw, like, the little boy Jake, like, throws the hook down onto her coffin.
Yeah.
Like, so they're, like, respecting her but also fearing her.
It's a good movie. It's well made. It's got a good score. It's got good acting. It's got a good script.
Yeah.
But you got to remember that this is gothic horror.
Yeah,
gothic horror is going to take.
Well, nothing wrong
with that. Gothic horror is going to take its time. There's going to be an element of romance and style to it.
It's almost like a fucked up love story.
Yeah, it kind of is, and it's actually kind of like a fucked up interracial love story.
Yeah,
there's definitely that angle because I remember watching it back in '92. That was the angle that was like one of the main selling angles.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a Dracula story, but in this case, instead of a vampire, it's a ghost, and he's a black guy.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of the same things from the original Dracula. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it is a very cool movie.
Very cool movie. It is not scary by today's standards, I would say. And it's not like a slasher. It's not even really that gory.
It's gory in parts.
It is. It does have blood. But it is a gothic horror movie. And you know what I mean? Kind of like an updated version of something you'd see from Hammer.
Yeah.
You know.
Although, like I said, some of the scenes, particularly the scene where the dog is killed and the scene where the psychiatrist gets killed, like, by Candyman, that's pretty gory. And I think it makes it worse. Some of the scenes, it makes it worse that you don't see what actually happens. You just see the aftermath of it. Like, you just see blood everywhere, like a dog head or whatever. But when the psychiatrist gets killed, one of the grossest things about it is the sound effects. And also Candyman is like grunting, like he's really fucking getting in there, you know what I mean? And he's just like tearing this fucking dude, and it's like super nasty.
Yeah, so, and he looks cool too. He's kind of got this big fur coat.
Yeah, it's like this really big coat, and he's a big dude, you know?
Yeah, and you can see he's got meat where his damn wrist used to be, and a hook coming out of it.
Yeah, this big nasty
blood all over that damn cuff. You know, kind of a, you know, it's kind of an unsettling figure.
And then, like, when he opens his coat and you can see his ribs, and then there's bees.
A bunch of bees and shit. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's awesome. It's, like, a really iconic
look.
And I feel like he's one of the most iconic, you know, villains of the 90s. And like I said, the horror in the 90s was a little meh. There wasn't, like, a lot of
great... Depending on what it would depend.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of great shit going on. Should say, too, like you said, you mentioned the score. The score for this is...
Yeah, score's pretty good.
Incredible. Yeah. Done by Philip Glass. I also wanted to mention, too, that Bernard Rose, who wrote and directed this, he also did a movie, I think it came out in 1988, that a lot of people haven't seen, but it's called Paper House, and if you really like these kind of like really weird, like little creepy movies and stuff, go check that shit out. It's like really, really good. And I feel like it doesn't get a lot of attention, but I saw it a little while back because I saw it like recommended on one of those underrated horror movie type of lists that I went and watched it. I think I found it for free on YouTube or Tubi or something like that. But that's also really good. It's nothing like Candyman, but you know, it's still like a cool movie in its own right. But I think there was like there was something else I wanted to mention, and now I can't even like remember what it was. Oh, what I did want to mention, like I said, this had two sequels: Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh, and Candyman 3, Day of the Dead. I think it was called. Neither of them are really worth watching, even though Tony Todd is in both of them. So you know, if you like him, you want to check him out. But it just fucks with the whole mythology of the first movie.
Well, they probably went more towards the slasher end, they did. Which is quicker. Which, for all you, okay, some people might like that, because you're going away from the gothic horror, more towards slasher.
But like and, I know, said,
it depends on what it is you're doing.
Inconsistent with...
Yeah, the tone was going to be
inconsistent. It just seemed like they kind of, like, fucked up, like, all the mythology
and
stuff.
I haven't seen them, so I
It just seemed very generic. It didn't. I mean, okay. Candyman seems like it built this whole world around this urban legend and this character, and then it just seemed like the sequels just went and did, let's just do like another half-ass slasher movie, except with this guy with the hook, which, you know.
Well, some people might like that. You know, I haven't seen it, so I can't pass judgment on it.
I don't like him. I'm just saying, I haven't seen any good reviews of him either.
Sometimes, you know, when I'm loaded, I just want to damn see, you know what I mean, something like Friday the 13th, how ridiculous those fuckers
are. Like, just people, like teenagers getting cut.
Really, you know, we went back and watched the Friday the 13th. I own what? I think I own the first three.
Yeah.
Only the first two were good.
Yeah, I had forgotten how shitty like
they got
the
bad.
Other
the first two were good. They were although that but one they with, weren't great. They were just good.
Although that one with Jason in space was actually pretty hilarious.
Yeah, Jason X, I think.
Yeah,
but that's what I was saying. You know, what I mean, if you sometimes if you're drinking, you're just having a good time, and you have, you know what I mean. And you have there's a bunch of people with you. Maybe that's more.
And they have to be bad enough to be like super entertaining.
Yeah,
they can't just be like mediocre.
So bad
like,
it's good.
Yeah. Oh, what another thing I was going to say, too, and I mentioned Jordan Peele earlier as, the, you know, as this being, like, people talk about, like, you know, all the racial, not undertones, but overtones, I guess,
in
Jordan Peele's movie. But this was doing it, like, a long time before that. This was back in 1992.
They were doing that before. This was cool.
Yeah, this
was
pretty overt.
It was subversive, really, in its day. It was breaking new ground.
Yeah, because it had a lot of issues, and it wasn't, like, subtle about it either.
It was a horror movie with a damn interracial angle.
Well, and it went a lot into, like, the residents of Cabrini Green, which is a real place, you know, and about all the gang warfare, like, a lot of the, you know, inequality and shit like that. It went into a lot of that, like, you know, like I said, a long time ago in 1992. So since I mentioned Jordan Peele, they're apparently doing a remake or a sequel of this that's going to come out next year. Now, I don't think Jordan Peele's going to direct it, but he is for sure going to produce it, and he's going to be involved in some way. So I think that might be pretty cool.
It might be good.
Because he seems like the guy to do that.
Yeah.
Because he's like a big fan of the movie.
You could update this movie today with today's technology. If you did it right, you could have a nice, riveting, fast-paced story. It, like I said, they were working within the framework of the 90s when they did this. It was great back in those days. But today, I already saw this movie too. That's another thing. Maybe if I was young, I'd never seen this movie. Maybe I would have had a different impact.
Yeah, well, and the thing about it, too, is that...
The 90s were a slow time. It was before social media and little fucking phones and shit like that. You watched a movie and sat there for several hours to escape. And there wasn't much to do. Nowadays, you know, there's all these other things competing for your time. A lot of these slow movies, I can't sit through them.
See, I don't have a problem with that. In a way, I mean, horror to me, I mean, I like stupid slasher movies as much as the next person. Like, it just depends on what mood I'm in.
Yeah.
But I think horror works better when there's a lot of buildup. Like, you know what I mean? When it gets you, like, invested in the story. The cool thing about Candyman, the original, is that you care about both characters. You care about Helen's character. Mm. You care about Candyman. You sympathize with him a little bit because he got a fucking raw deal in fucking life, and you can understand why he's mad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's sympathy on both sides, and it's, you know, the story is so compelling that, and you sympathize with her later on because she's getting framed for murders that it appears she did not commit, so you can put yourself in those shoes.
Yeah.
And I like that they kept Candyman back until like the halfway point of the movie, and then just introduced him very slowly.
Who would play Candyman today, though?
I don't know. Idris Elba, maybe?
Yeah.
He could probably do it.
Yeah.
He's got a good voice, also. Yeah.
The guy that was...
he's British. Well, he can do an American accent. Right, he's done an American accent before.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he can do it.
That was the first person I thought of, was Idris Elba.
I like all his work.
Except for Dark Tower.
Yeah, Dark Tower. That wasn't his
fault.
But
that wasn't his fault,
though. That wasn't his fault.
He was the only good thing in that movie.
Yeah, he made that movie better.
He did. But the problem with that movie was that they shouldn't have tried to make it in the first place.
Yeah,
because it was
bad
just,
idea.
Yeah, that was just
Dark
a bad
Tower
idea.
Dark Tower has to be a series. It can't be a movie.
It can't just be. And that movie wasn't even really based on any of the books exactly. They just took like bits and pieces.
No,
and
I read those books, and there's nothing from those books in that movie.
No, it's just like I said, it was just like, it was almost kind of like, set in the same universe type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like they were doing that. But so, yeah, I'm kind of like... I'm normally just kind of like, oh god, a remake or whatever. Now, this might not be a remake, it might be a sequel, I'm not really sure. Because I think when I was reading about it, they said, well, it's going to be like the baby Anthony that got kidnapped in the first movie, that he's going to be grown up now, so I guess it's like a sequel. But it's also still about the urban legend. They said that they might get Tony Todd back for Candyman. But he says he understands if he's like too old and they have to get somebody else. But he would be excited to be a part of it. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, like I said, I love Jordan Peele. So, and he seems like the guy to do this, to tackle this kind of material, because it's very similar to stuff that he usually does. So we'll see how it turns out. But like I said, if you haven't seen Candyman, you really need to check it out. Also check out Clive Barker's short story, The Forbidden. Like I said, they're kind of different, but, you know, the frame or the story is the same. It's, you know, it's just set in Liverpool instead of Chicago. And, you know, the character of Candyman is a little bit different. But other than that, it's pretty similar. But yeah, check it out. It's on Netflix at the moment. They just added it for October because it's Halloween, and that's the time everybody's watching fucking horror movies, man. So go and check it out.